Several Mexican drug cartels have been engaged in violent drug wars for quite a while now. The situation has created a state of lawlessness in parts of the country and in the United States along portions of our southern border. But in both places, frustrated average citizens have taken up arms against the cartels, and that's created even more problems. Matthew Hunman joins us now to discuss his documentary Cartel Land, which follows two different vigilante groups, the Autodefensas in Michoacán, Mexico, and the Arizona Border Recon in the United States. The film opens this Friday at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village, and I'm very pleased to welcome Matthew Hunman, who served as the film's director and director of photography, to our show today. Hello.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
You begin and end your film with an interview with Mexican methamphetamine cooks. Why did you choose to make that your bookends?
Meth was the lifeblood of the cartel. It was their cash cow. Most of the meth that we consume in the U.S. comes from Mexico, a lot of that from Michoacán, and most of that from this cartel, the Knights Templar, who were the reigning cartel in this region.
Breaking Bad was inaccurate?
I've actually never seen Breaking Bad, so I can't comment on that.
Well, it suggests that it's all coming out of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Used to. You know, things have changed as we sort of crack down on the cocaine meth in the States. So a lot of it does come, most of it does come from Mexico. And it was a really important part of the story. And so every single shoot, I would try to get into a meth lab. And it wasn't until our final shoot that I was able to.
Well, I can't imagine that they said, oh, sure, come in and film us.
No. You know, for them, it was a fascinating experience. I mean, for them, they're farmers. They're cultivating a crop. It just so happens that the crop is meth. It just so happens that the crop makes its way northward. It just so happens that the crop, you know, ruins lives. But for them, they're just getting by.
Is this similar to what we've seen in Afghanistan, that farmers who are having a hard time making it the usual way wound up getting involved in drugs and drug dealing?
I can't comment on that. I'm not sure.
To what extent do you think that the Mexican drug war and the American war on drugs is a matter of good versus evil?
So, you know, this film is really, it's about these two different vigilante groups on both sides of the border and, you know, fighting the same shared enemy, the Mexican drug cartels. On the Mexican side, I followed the Autodefensas, which was the citizens' movement led by a small-town doctor against the Knights Templar cartel. The minute I stepped foot in Mexico, I thought I was telling this very simple hero-villain story of guys in white shirts fighting against guys in black shirts, and then
with Dr. Morales being the biggest hero,
he's the leader of this group. And you know, over time, the story changed, the story evolved, and the lines between good and evil became ever more blurry.
Well, getting back to the cartels, how do the cartel members justify what they do? In some cases, they engage in extremely cruel behavior. They kill children. They behead people. That's a lot more than just selling drugs.
They operate with impunity. That's part of what this film is about, you know, these citizens living in daily fear. The reason the cartels commit these acts of violence are there are multiple reasons as to why. A lot of it has to do with just invoking fear amongst the people. And, you know, these citizens in Michoacán were living in terror. They're living in a world where they have no government, or if the government is there, you know, they're often colluding with the cartels. And so it's really a lawless world that they were living in. And that's why this movement rose up. That's why these people rose up to fight back, to bring order to chaos, to bring peace to terror.
Were they just ordinary farmers and townspeople?
they were townspeople, shopkeepers, lawyers, businessmen. And in the case of our main character, you know, a small town surgeon.
What about in Arizona? I assume some of those guys are former military.
Most of them are former military. At the heart of this film are these two guys, Tim Naylor Foley, the head of the Arizona Vigilante Group, and El Doctor, the head of the Autodefensas. They're both 55 years old. You know, they both believe that the government has failed them, and they both, quote unquote, taken the law into their own hands to fight for what they believe in. But the circumstances are quite different. In Mexico, the violence is visceral. It's real. 80,000 people killed since 2007. 20,000 people disappeared since 2007. Whereas in Arizona, that violence is much more theoretical. It's a fear that these Mexican drug wars will seep its way across our border.
Wasn't the Arizona Border Recon classified as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center?
At one point they were, yes.
Do you think that's a fair assessment? Because on film, one of the members rants about how different races aren't meant to be together.
I think that's one of the important parallels with both of these groups. You know, in some ways, this film is really about what provokes men and women to take up arms. And on both sides, you know, part of the story is that despite perhaps noble intentions of the leadership, you can't control necessarily who's amongst your ranks. And that eventually, on the Mexican side, is what leads to their downfall.
In the case of the Arizona Recon, they are mainly looking for people coming across the border with drugs or just simply people who would try to slip into the United States?
So the leader of this group, Tim Naylor Foley, you know, as he says in the film, originally went down to the border to stop illegal immigrants from coming across. And over time, he realized that the real enemy was not them, but was the cartels that were controlling them. 5 years ago, there's two different businesses. There's drug smuggling and there's human smuggling. Now, in the past couple of years, this is new, that has changed. Everything is controlled by the cartels. Everything that's coming across the border is controlled by the cartels.
Well, over half of the film covers the story of the outer defenses. Why didn't you just make a documentary about them? Because it's a fascinating story.
It's a fascinating story. I think, to me, this parallelism was also fascinating. You know, I really want to explore, as I said, what motivates men and women to take up arms. And, you know, I really wanted to compare these two groups.
What sorts of weapons do the two vigilante groups use? I guess in Arizona, anyone can have a gun or a rifle. But in Mexico, are they readily available?
That was part of the story, is that, you know, when we first got down there, you started to ask questions. Where are these guns coming from? Where are these trucks coming from? Where are these bulletproof vests coming from? And the more and more you sort of ask these questions, the more and more you wonder, you know, are these guys the good guys or the bad guys? And that was what was so scary about making this film, is you really didn't know who you're with. You could be on an operativo on a mission, and you didn't know whether you're with the good guys or the bad guys.
I would assume that another reason it gets scary is that in the middle of shooting, you shooting film, people start shooting guns, and you had to duck. How dangerous was it?
It's extremely dangerous. You know, I'm not a war reporter. I've never been in situations like this before. But, you know, through the process of making this film, I find myself in shootouts between the vigilantes and the cartel, you know, as I said, meth labs in the dark desert night, in places of torture, you know, mass funerals, places that I sort of never could have imagined being in, especially, you know, in gunfights. But for me, I think the scariest moment was not these sort of adrenaline-filled moments, but was an interview that I did with a young woman who was kidnapped by the cartel along with her husband. She witnessed him being hacked up to pieces in front of her and then burned to death. And to be in this room with this woman and to look into her eyes and to see almost as if her soul had been sucked out of her, to hear her describe these horrors, and to think that we are the same species of human beings that would do that to other people, that stuck with me much more so than any of these shootouts or more adrenaline-filled moments.
And it's painful for the viewer as well. But she says that they told her the reason they didn't kill her after they killed her husband was because she was going to have to live with the memory of seeing what they had done to him. And it's obvious they had their way because she has been emotionally destroyed by the experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it would be impossible to not be. And I think that's what this story is about. I mean, these everyday citizens, you know, who are affected by this horrific violence. I mean, to live in a society where, you know, another woman that we spent time with, her whole family was murdered, kidnapped and then murdered by the cartel, and to not have the ability to go to the police and report that, to be in fear that these police that were there to protect her are either working with the cartel or paid by the cartel. I mean, this, you know, this is what happens when government institutions fail.
I've gone to Mexico any number of times in the last few years, and of course, and the Mexico I've seen is very different from the one that I see in this film. Mexico City, Oaxaca, Mérida, places like that. They just seem to be wonderful places to go. Are there really two Mexicos?
there are many, many Americas, and there's many, many Mexicos. I mean, I was just down in Mexico last week. The film is also being released in theaters in Mexico this weekend. And, you know, it's a whole different world there.
Do you, I'm sure some people have already seen it in Mexico. Are they shocked by what they see?
I think they are. You know, this part of my goal of this film is to, you know, there's been so much coverage about narco violence, and in some ways it's been glorified on TV and in movies. I really wanted to sort of get on the ground and put my camera right in the middle of the action. And so I think, you know, we were able to get access to scenes and to places that people haven't seen before.
My guest is Matthew Heineman, who not only directed but also is one of the cinematographers of a new film called Cartel Land, which opens this Friday at the IFC Center on Avenue of the Americas in Greenwich Village.
And Lincoln Plaza as well.
Lincoln Plaza as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Dr. Morales before. Do you think he was particularly effective in recruiting members because he was a respected doctor? He also, hadn't he run for office?
He, you know, he was a person that people loved. I mean, I think, you know, a really interesting moment is when he talks about you know, when they first rose up, they're all wearing masks. And, you know, to cover their identity because they're, you know, scared. And he's really tall. I think he's probably 6'2", or so. And, everyone knew him as the tall doctor in town. So they said, hey, doctor, you know, thank you so much for being part of the movement. And he's like, you know, screw it. If everyone knows who I am anyway, I might as well take off this mask. And that's how he became the leader.
What was the response of the Mexican government to the fact that the outer defenses not only were created, but that they were having a real impact?
It's really complicated. You know, I think in many ways, you know, Michoacan, you know, as many places in Mexico, it's a failed state. You know, they failed to provide basic safety and security for their people. And when the outer defenses rose up, you know, they were doing the government's dirty work. They were getting rid of the cartel in a way that the government had been unable to for many, many years. And so they sort of allowed them to expand and grow. And at one point, they grew to 20,000 people or so. And at that point, the government realized that this is a problem. To have 20,000 people, you know, controlling this state, walking around with assault rifles, you know, being both, you know, judge and jury, was a problem. And so they tried to sort of infiltrate them. They tried to control them. And eventually, they basically legalized them into a legal police force.
They co-opted them.
To some degree,
didn't that make sense? Because the outer defenses, which started off as just a group of people trying to defend themselves against the cartels, wound up engaging in criminal activities themselves.
That's when the film got interesting.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I think, as I said, originally
no good guys and bad guys.
You know, the lines became so blurry. And you know, you really didn't know where the story was going. And that's why it was a fascinating film to make, because, you know, I originally thought I was telling one story, and I ended up telling a much, much different story.
And the outer defenses lost popularity with large sections of the population as well because of some of the things they were doing.
Yeah. I mean, those who are fighting against evil started to become evil. And, you know, this is a story that we've seen play out throughout history. We see it play out throughout the world today, and we'll continue to see it play out throughout our future of people rising up to fight against something and then, you know, not being able to necessarily control people within their ranks.
So they were co-opted into the Rural Defense Corps. Has that been a more effective force against the cartels?
No, I mean, by co-opting them, they basically ended the movement. They, you know, a few of them legalized, a subsection of the outer defense was legalized into this force. But for the most part, they splintered the movement. They you know, pinned people against each other, and the movement was fractured. And today, what that results in is that the violence continues, the kidnappings continue, and, you know, unfortunately, the cycle has continued.
I don't want to reveal everything that happens, like what happens to Dr. Morales and whether we wind up thinking he's a good guy or a bad guy. But one of the Mexican meth cooks in your documentary seems to be wearing a police uniform. Was he a member of the police? Do you know?
Leonard, you're trying to give away the end of the, the movie here. But that's, I mean, at the end of the movie, the lines between government, cartel, auto defensa, they all became quite blurry.
Now, this became an issue in the most recent elections in Mexico. Corruption was something that was discussed, and also the ineffectiveness of the government in fighting criminal activities. And yet, the PRI party was sent back. That they didn't win as many seats in the parliament as they had before. But it seems to me business as usual.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's so sad, you know, is that corruption, you know, impunity with the cartels, that hasn't changed, you know. In 2007, when a war on drugs started, when President Calderon, you know, declared a war on drugs, you know, many people were skeptical. And what that's resulted in is 80,000 people being killed, 20,000 people disappeared, and, you know, the violence continuing.
We've had guests on previously who've talked about Calderon and then his successors, and they claimed that the government actually would take sides in the wars between the various cartels. They would arrest a bunch of members of the Zetas, but then that would allow their competition, their enemies, to do better.
Yeah, I mean, often what happens, even if, you know, they do, you know, the Mexican government often brags when they capture, you know, the head of a cartel. But, you know, most people think that that's not necessarily a good thing, that that then just results in a fight for power, and that fight for power results in more violence.
And what are do the cartel members have any explanation for why they act the way they do? I mean, couldn't they just engage in drug trade in without doing all the other things that they do?
So all drug cartels are not created equal. And what was particularly interesting about the Knights Templar cartel, which is the cartel that operated in Michoacan where I was filming, they had this very bizarre sort of pseudo, you know, Christian medieval, you know, way of looking at the world. And they really thought that they were there to protect the people, when in fact, you know, they were, you know, murdering, extorting, killing, raping the people of Michoacan.
It's been argued that none of this would be possible without the U.S., without U.S. policies on drugs. Do you think that's true?
I really, with this film, you know, I really tried to not make a policy film. I tried, you know, there's been many people out there, you know, making films about drug policy, failed drug policy. I really wanted to make a film about the effects of these policies on everyday people.
And do you have any idea of why the violence stops at the Mexican border? The drugs come into the U.S., the cartels act here. But we don't hear about too many killings in the United States.
You know, there's definitely cartel violence in the States, gang violence in the States, obviously resulting from the drug trade, you know, in cities all across the country. That violence.
I thought it was more likely to come from other Central American countries.
There's no question that the violence in Mexico and in other parts of South America are, you know, it's not even comparable as a, you know.
Matthew Heineman will be holding Q&As at the 7:15 p.m. and 9:45 p.m. IFC Center screenings of Cartel Land on Friday, this coming Friday, and then again on Sunday at 5 p.m. You're not going to be doing anything at the Lincoln Plaza?
I will be as well. I think I'm on Friday and on Sunday. So.
For more information and tickets, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. It's called Cartel Land. It's an incredibly powerful film. And it's also a film that challenges all of our ideas of what's right and wrong and whether who we should trust and who we should not trust. Thank you so much for being on our show today to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me.